Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to the Global Product Management Talk. This is your regular broadcast about product management issues, product excellence, covering the worldwide information happening around product management experts, practitioners, visionaries, and people contributing to forwarding product excellence, process, knowledge, and information. I am Cindy Faye Solomon, your host. Delighted to be with you live after a hiatus of a few months. We're broadcasting out of Studio132.com in the Oakland Hills with BZ Lewis, our six-time Emmy-winning sound engineer. You're listening to Blame Sally, excellent local group that performs regularly. I love the music. So, the Global Product Management Talk, you can find us on the web at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. We are a top 10 business podcast on the Blog Talk Radio channel network. There are millions of podcasts out there. There are over 100 episodes available, archived for your listening pleasure and also your learning. You can also find us on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. We have an Android app. Just search for PRODMGMTTALK. That is our hashtag, pound PRODMGMTTALK. And our Twitter handle, @PRODMGMTTALK. You can also join us at crowdchat.net if you are tweeting and if you would like to join the discussion. crowdchat.net/PRODMGMTTALK. You can read transcripts of our past discussions. Last week, we talked about the harsh realities of a tech startup with Barnes Schoner. Just wrote a book about that. Today, we have Greg Girasi, who's the president of Actuation Consulting, joining us. We're talking about product teams, what works and what doesn't. Before I get there, I just want to do a shout-out to our sponsors. Thank you to the AIPMM, the Association of International Product Management and Marketing, on the web at AIPMM.com, on Twitter at AIPMM. They have an excellent webinar series, and they are the worldwide body of certifying product professionals in certification, professional networking opportunities and trainings to become a certified product manager, certified product marketing manager, agile certified manager, innovation leader. They guarantee that your product professionals are operating at peak performance. Check them out. Thank you to Audible.com. If you go over to audibletrial.com/PRODMGMTTALK, audibletrial.com/PRODMGMTTALK, you'll get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day free trial. And you can listen to top sellers. And there is a list I went through what books you can listen to. There's quite a bit of product management-related books available. So I will tweet out that list, and you can get them at audibletrial.com/PRODMGMTTALK. So thank you to Webcast Digest. If you have an hour today and you want to learn something, go over to webcast.digest, webcastdigest.com/calendar. And see what webinar, webcast, or digital event is available today. There are some great ones coming up that are all-day free online events. If you subscribe, you will get access to the sign-in and registration information for each individual event. That's at webcastdigest.com. Thanks, Startup Product Academy, Product Therapy Tuesdays at Tech Liminal in Oakland. Right in the Ask building, join us on Tuesdays if you are working on a product, you have a product dilemma, or you need some product management help. And announcing a new strategic social media tool. Check it out if you want to get involved with their beta. They're at expressmango.com. ExpressMango. And announcing the Product Summit San Francisco. 4 full days of immersion into product excellence with experts, visionaries, practitioners discussing the future of product, productivity, and product management. There will be the all-day summit of speakers followed by a workshop day with several tracks. On Saturday will be a prototype hackathon, a no-code hackathon to work with teams, get hands-on experience applying your expertise to building a product and discovering what it takes to communicate that. And on Sunday, November 23rd, is Product Camp San Francisco, where everyone gets to share what they've learned, teach, discuss important issues. We vote in the morning on the schedule. Go to productsummit.org, and that information will be there. It's launching the new General Assembly flagship location in San Francisco at 225 Bush, November 20th through 23rd. Early bird tickets are available through September 30th is the best price. Very, very exciting. There's been a lot going on in the world of product management. There's been Product Camp Berlin, Product Camp Bengaluru in India, Mind the Product in London, and happening even as we speak today is the Product Management Festival in Zurich, where lots of the participants and speakers who have been on the Global Product Management Talk and have been at previous Product Camp San Francisco's and Startup Product Summits, they are all converging there. But we are here in the San Francisco Bay Area talking today with Greg Girasi. He's the president of Actuation Consulting, and for the past 3 years, they have done this annual global study of product team performance. The study focuses on identifying key factors that enable high-performance product teams. So today we're talking about what makes some product teams successful and what are those ingredients and what does it take. Greg Girasi is a recognized thought leader in the field of product management. He's also been a frequent guest, which is great because there's always a lot to talk about with him, as well as the study and the study results, which are available in a free white paper. You can go to actuationconsulting.com right now and download that white paper so you can review it. It's a free download, actuationconsulting.com. You can review it while we speak about it, and Greg will go into depth. Greg is also the author of the global bestseller, Take Charge Product Management, and he led the development of the Guide to the Product Management and Marketing Body of Knowledge, which is the ProdBoc. All of this information, by the way, is available at the startupproduct.com blog. You can get the link to the white paper, you can get the link to the ProdBoc, and you can see the picture, Greg's picture. So why don't I bring you on? By the way, one more thing. Sorry, Greg. This is Cindy Faye Solomon. You can follow me on Twitter at Cindy F. Solomon. And get in touch with me, Cindy at startupproduct.com. Greg, are you there?
I am, Cindy. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks. I see you have a lot of speaking engagements coming up. You're going to be in Boston speaking about the study, and I know you're coming out here to the Silicon Valley Code Camp, which is coming up in October to talk about it. So that'll be great to see you again. And very excited about the results of the study. So why don't you fill in whatever I left out, and I have some questions for you about it.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks, Cindy. First of all, great to be here. As it relates to the study, I think you've done a great job covering it. I mean, over the last 3 years, we've been conducting this annual study. We get feedback. About 1,500 companies a year respond to the survey request. We work with a variety of associations and partners to distribute the survey. And all of the surveys are anonymous unless people want to self-disclose. And the reason that they might want to self-disclose is simply so that they can be the first to get a copy of the white paper when it's released. And also they get included in the survey going forward, so they have the opportunity to provide their feedback about what's going on within their organizations and specifically on their product teams. Roughly about 98% of the participants each year are actively involved in product development activities at some level within their organization. And, you know, we've really enjoyed the opportunity to sort of, you know, peel the layers of the onion back each year about what are the factors that really contribute to high performance on product teams. And that's really the nature of our work, is to try to understand better, you know, what differentiates high performance teams from the pack.
So you've done it for the past 3 years, and what, you know, is there anything unique or different about this year's study than the past in terms of the process as well as the participants?
Yeah. So in terms of the process, it's virtually the same. Each year we hire a group of statisticians that are, you know, outside of our organization, as well as a survey firm to conduct it on our behalf. So we've used eFocus Groups, which is our survey group, to actually conduct the survey for the last 3 years. We like to keep it consistent so that there's as little variation as possible. And then in terms of the regression analysis, this year, as in prior years, a gentleman by the name of Gary Pickens, who's the chief research officer for Truven Healthcare, actually was kind enough to run the regression analysis. And so from a process standpoint, as well as the you know, the folks that help support the study, both on the research side as well as the statistical analysis and regression analysis, it's remained very constant. The things that have changed in the study are really the natures of the questions that we ask and, you know, ultimately the findings.
So the nature of the questions have changed. In what way?
Well, you know, this year, for instance, we started to take a look a little bit more at things like the sales cycle, return on investment, critical handoffs, and then some of the key subcomponents of what makes for an effective product team in terms of culture. And, you know, in prior studies, one of the things that we did a little bit more of was conditional logic. This year we used it very selectively. So I'd say, you know, it's really the focus. What's unique about the study is that each year as we learn something, we have the opportunity to either ask new questions to fill in an area, you know, that we don't have a lot of insight into, or we can peel back the layers of the onion and learn more, if you will, about a particular area, because maybe our first question was a broader brushstroke and we want to get, you know, there's some intriguing question that we think, you know, we can dive into that'll give us greater insight into a particular area. So there was a good combination this year of both new topical areas such as ROI and, you know, product teams' awareness of the sales cycle, for instance, as well as, you know, diving into things that we knew were problems from a historical standpoint, such as, you know, handoffs between various, you know, functional areas, as well as the role of marketing, you know, and product marketing and sort of their proximity to the product team.
Excellent. Hey, I want to do a shout-out to our community. There's a lot of startup product meetup communities. People are listening in. So by the way, if you are listening and you want to come over to CrowdChat to tweet, please introduce yourself and let us know, and we'll tweet out to you, and I'll do a shout-out to you. So one of the questions, or Q1, let's say, what factors contribute to a positive environment for product teams and lead to higher performance? And I would think that a lot of factors.
There are. In fact, over the course of the 3 years of study, we've actually identified about 16 different factors that contribute to high performance. So, for example, in the 2012 study, the first year that we conducted it, the factors really were around unwavering executive team support, strong product team alignment with company strategy, post-product development focus and accountability, bringing product team members on board, as well as assigning product team members based upon the skills needed. Each of those particular areas, you know, were statistically proven to actually have high correlation to high product team performance. And in 2013, we drilled more into a couple of these areas and then rounded out the picture a bit more by looking at the importance of aligning corporate strategy and product strategy, the role of the business unit leader and their level of engagement, product manager role definition. Obviously, you know, the more clearly defined the product manager role is, there was a correlation with higher levels of performance on the team. Importance of product launch, once again, a big area where I think many people will agree there's significant problems historically in the handoff from, you know, product development into product launch and managing it effectively. And we get some really interesting insights in that particular area, as well as a deeper dive into onboarding the product team members and some key findings around that. So that's a brief review of the 2012 and 2013 findings. If any of the listeners are interested, when they go to, you know, the website to download the 2014 paper, they also have the opportunity to download the 2012 and 2013 studies as well, and they could get into the findings in detail.
Excellent. That is superb. Okay, so in terms of the differentiating between teams that perform well and teams that don't, and I know you studied, I guess you couldn't really study high-performing team results, but really, what are the most common hurdles that negatively impact team performance? And go slow so I can get it all out. your answers here.
There's a wide range, you know, so product team performance is, you know, complex. If it were easy, all teams would be able to, you know, perform at a high level. So, in fact, this year's study showed that only 10% of teams, actually have seamless, product team cohesion and trust and collaboration. In fact, 90% of product teams basically admitted to the fact that they had some level of struggle and were not functioning as a seamless team with high levels of trust and collaboration. In fact, only a third of our survey respondents this year indicated that they were performing at a consistent level of delivering on scope, schedule, and cost. And in fact, two-thirds of product teams indicated that they were, acting, you know, at a suboptimal level, which is pretty staggering when you think about it. So if you combine those two facts alone, that only 10% of teams actually convey that they have seamless, you know, trust and collaboration, and the fact that, you know, only a third of product teams are actually optimizing their productivity and performance, there's obviously a lot of room for improvement in the product development community.
So only 10% of product teams convey seamless alignment, and only 30%? What was the second?
33%, one-third of teams basically indicate that they're operating at an optimal level of performance.
Which is subjective. I mean, how do you even determine what is a high level of performance?
Right. So because we're talking about product teams, our threshold in terms of defining it, and it's been consistent over the last 3 years, is consistent execution on scope, schedule, and cost of a particular project, product development effort. And that's been the common thread that we've used across the last 3 years' studies to define high performance.
Okay. That is key. How do
it's
we
central.
Define, right? Okay, because you know, we talk about product excellence, but that's, you know, how do you define it? Well, it's very contextual. What is excellent, you know, in one situation may not translate. But I think, you know, being consistent execution on scope, schedule, and cost of the product development, that is measurable. That is quantifiable. That is not subjective.
Absolutely true. Well, you know, I say that from the standpoint of being, you know, running a consulting practice, because, you know, ultimately we do a lot of work with clients in this area, and this is stuff that we measure on their behalf. So we know that these things can be quantified and how to go about doing it.
Great. So one of the things that the study looks at is development methodology. And I know that in previous studies, it was quite interesting that I had, before reviewing the study, I had assumed, well, is very wide adoption of Agile methodology and Lean methodology. And I know that, I'm not sure if it was the last study or the first study indicated it wasn't as widespread as was presumed. What did you find this time around?
Yeah, so your recollections are from the 2012 study, and, you know, at that period of time, 2012, so we've been trending this data for 3 years. In fact, I should say we've been collecting this data for 3 years, and in this year's white paper, we actually trended it for the very first time, so specifically around Agile. What we basically saw in 2012, at least what survey respondents told us, is that approximately 13% of product teams had actually implemented Agile. And what was interesting, as we looked across into 2013, the number grew almost exponentially. There was a very fast adoption of Agile in the 2012-2013 timeframe. And in fact, what had been a little less than 13% in 2012 jumped significantly to over 30% in 2013. And then in this year's finding, what product teams told us is that there was still a pretty significant increase of about 10%, bringing it up to about 33%. But, you know, the rate of adoption of Agile has, in fact, started to flatten out a little bit. I think it'll continue, looking forward into my crystal ball if I had to project. I think it'll continue to pick up share, but at a much smaller rate and not in the exponential leaps that took place from 2012 to 2013.
So do you think that the change had to do with the respondents to the survey as well?
Well, I mean, obviously, what I think happened is, you know, Agile, there are a lot of benefits to Agile Scrum-type approaches, and organizations, you know, had, you know, so if we look back, and let's say we talk about Waterfall for a second, Waterfall in 2012 was at 18%, and it fell, you know, during that same time period when Agile was climbing at an aggressive pace. Waterfall was declining from 18% to about 12%, so about 6 points. So I think what happened is, you know, there's a lot of organizations that aspired to get to Agile but were using methodologies like Waterfall that run counter to the Agile approaches. And it took time for, you know, organizations that had been relying on Waterfall as their primary development methodology to actually make the jump. And we can see, you know, the correlation in the numbers that, you know, there was a significant decrease in Waterfall's use. And by the way, in 2013, it has continued to decline. It's now down to 10%, roughly about half of what it was in 2012. And looking forward, it's likely to decline even further, probably down to 5 or 6%. But the bottom line basically is I think what ended up happening was organizations, it's taken time for them to, you know, train their product teams, train their product managers, sort of get to the point where they could implement these methodologies effectively. And so, you know, that's why I think you saw this big move because of all the, you know, the hype during the period around the benefits of Agile, which are real and tangible, But it took time for organizations to be able to make that jump. And, you know, and also we tracked blended methodologies, which were at 53% approximately, you know, during the 2012 period. They dropped to 43% in 2013, and they bounced back a little bit this year to about 45%. So not too statistically significant of a difference, but it's pointing to the fact that, you know, that a lot of these agile, these organizations that aspired to be agile in 2012, 10% of them basically made the jump in 2013. And so the combination of waterfalls decline and, you know, many organizations passing through blended methodologies on their way towards more of a Scrum or Agile approach is what really, you know, contributed to that healthy pop in 2013 in Agile methodology adoption.
Sure. So it takes time to implement and get everyone on board. So did you see any new trends, any mention of lean methodology or different kinds of extreme programming or mob programming?
Yeah, so what I would say is that Kanban actually, you know, started to pick up some significant pace this year at about almost 3% of survey respondents. However, over the last couple of years, lean has actually been declining. In 2012, 6% of product teams indicated that they were using lean methodologies. In 2013, it was down to 2.6%. So there's been a significant reduction in the adoption of lean, at least in terms of the data that we've collected. Meanwhile, I think Kanban has picked up as, you know, some of the lean slack, I'm guessing. I can't say for certain, but it appears that Kanban is benefiting because the gap between the data in 2012 around lean and, you know, what happened in 2013 with lean is roughly the same amount as Kanban's, jump upward in terms of, you know, tangible results as a methodology in and of itself in our data.
So could you describe just briefly for our listeners what is meant by Kanban? We're getting a question here. It's like, is Kanban actually a product development process equal to Agile? So the question is, they didn't think that those were equal development methodologies.
Yeah, I mean, we don't make judgments around the methodologies. You know, what we're really trying to do is basically understand what methodologies are being used and, you know, adopted. So, you know, from our viewpoint, it really doesn't make a difference. You know, it's really what our constituents are basically telling us, you know, are the methods that they're using. And it might be helpful for the listeners to understand that, you know, our survey crosses a variety of different market segments, everything from consumer products, technology companies, services, government, education. So, you know, it spans a wide variety of market segments. So, that may help people who maybe have more of a particular point of view to understand, you know, that we don't really have a point of view on this. What we're really interested in is understanding how, you know, product teams, what methods they're using, and then tracking sort of how they trend over periods of time. So that's really our focus. It's not so much for advocating for one approach or the other.
But I think that people are listening to discover which approach is best. So,
yeah, I mean, I think if we were, you know, so what I would say is, you know, looking at the data and where things are trending, I mean, I would say that there's certainly significant momentum behind Agile approaches. It may not be growing exponentially, but 10% year-over-year gains is still pretty significant. And it's coming at the expense of traditional approaches such as waterfall and, you know, blended approaches. I think – I think what we're likely to see is that Agile continues to grow, but, you know, in incremental phases, and that, you know, methods like blended, a lot of organizations may not be able to make the jump to pure, you know, Agile methodologies, but they recognize the benefits of Agile approaches, and they're finding ways to blend it with their traditional ways of producing, you know, products, and waterfalls continuing to, you know, to feel the brunt of it. One thing that's probably worth mentioning, Cindy, you know, when you look, one of the questions we asked had to do with profitability, about, you know, how product team members view, I guess the actual question was, which methodology do you associate with increasing the profitability of your product? And as we mentioned earlier, only a third of teams actually use Agile, but 43% of product team respondents basically view Agile as the best way to increase product profitability. So that basically tells you that, you know, there's a lot of at least 10% of product team members who are looking aspiringly at Agile methodologies as, you know, some place they want to get to because they think it has a positive impact on their product's profitability. And so that's why I say I foresee Agile continuing to pick up market share, but at a much slower rate. And we know that there's probably at least 10% of product team respondents out there who, you know, want to make the jump there. Whether they can get there based on the constraints of their organization is another matter entirely.
Excellent. I just want to do a shout out to Gil Zilberfeld, who is tweeting. He says that Kanban is a management system, can be used for product development. Thanks for that distinction, Gil. And thanks to Kelsey McKay, who has joined us from CrowdChat. Great tool for having live chats. And Alicia, another fan of the team, of the talk, a regular participant. She is in Zurich at the Product Management Festival, so we'll have to give a shout out to her too. So thanks. What do you think? Can you tell from the study results which methods are viewed by practitioners worldwide is leading to increased profitability? So not asking for a judgment call, but based on... Greg, are you there?
Hey, Cindy. Yeah, for a second there, you dropped, but I can hear you clearly now.
Okay.
So I think your question was around profitability and, you know, how, you know, what the data basically shows around, you know, perceptions around product profitability. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. We're a little bit of technical difficulty here. Sorry about that.
Okay, yeah, no problem. I just wanted to, I caught enough of it that I think I got the gist of what you were asking. So, so, you know, the data this year, basically, it's the second year we've asked this question around profitability of the product, although this year we also asked an additional question, not around methodology specifically, but also about the use of ROI, which brought back some interesting insights as well. We may want to chat about that after we talk through this one. But the data this year showed that that respondents view Agile Scrum, roughly 43% of respondents basically view Agile Scrum as the most impactful methodology on profitability. However, 23% of respondents basically indicated from their perspective that blended methodologies were the preferred methodology for having a favorable impact on product profitability. 20% of respondents actually didn't know, you know, which methodology they believed would actually have the most beneficial impact on a product's profitability. Waterfall scored at 5%, other at about 6%, and Kanban at about 4%. So by far and away, agile methods are perceived as being the most impactful to a product's profitability, followed by, you know, not too closely, but at about 50% of that level, about 23% with blended methodologies. Everything else is pretty, you know, minuscule by comparison.
Got it. Okay. So I'm tracking all kinds of things here. So how, regarding the ROI, how do global product teams actually utilize return on investment and the expected payback periods? I mean, how do they even track the return on investment for the, you know, even what part of the product development team process can be measured for ROI?
Yeah. So I think maybe the best place to start to answer that question, Cindy, is to really maybe lay out what the question was and how many people actually use it. And I think from there, maybe we can spin off into, you know, what perceptions are about ROI and then who on the team's accountable for it. Is that fair?
Sure.
Okay. So, you know, the question we asked was, is ROI a metric your company uses to determine the relative success of your product's profitability? And what we found was is that less than 17% of respondents indicated that ROI is central to what their product team does. In fact, 83% of survey respondents, indicated that their teams are not held accountable to ROI, use it on a limited basis, or don't use it at all, which, you know, as somebody who's been, you know, a VP and a CPO of, you know, product teams in the past, I just remember having been held accountable to ROI by the majority of organizations that I've worked for, at least in terms of putting together the business case, although I will admit that in many organizations, once the business case is put together, you know, at which point nobody tracks it as closely as they should. So it becomes more of sort of a proof of concept, if you will, rather than, you know, followed all the way through, you know, in its execution. But these 17% of respondents said that ROI is part of the DNA of their organization and it's the basis for everything that they do. But the 83% indicated the answers ranged from, you know, we use ROI to determine relative success, but are not accountable to it, to a large chunk at 33% that say we don't use ROI actively. So the use of ROI appears to be relegated to a relatively small amount of organizations, just shy of 17%. As it relates to, you know, what period of ROI people are being held accountable to, 12 months was the most significant number in terms of the amount of responses, although the responses were fairly evenly distributed. And, you know, that's sort of consistent with my perception, at least from a consulting standpoint, of what I see with many organizations. I don't think not all organizations tend to differentiate between, you know, the type of market that they're trying to serve, you know, whether they have to educate the market about the product, which might take longer, up to 3 years, you know, in some cases, for them to drive sufficient awareness. So a lot of it has to do with, there often tends to be this underlying assumption that all products will pay back in 12 months, when in fact, you know, market considerations play a big part in, you know, what's the appropriate period of time, you know, before a product it should be expected to receive a certain ROI. So the bottom line is, of those 17% of organizations that actually do use ROI, you know, the data basically shows that a 12-month payback period is the most common element to do it. And in terms of who gets held accountable to ROI, you know, As somebody who's run product organizations and does, you know, a lot of work in this area, I know that, you know, the product managers are often held accountable to this when it's part of an organization's DNA. And in certain instances, that's distributed across the entire team. It may also be that project managers and specific line managers get held accountable to these ROI numbers as well. So they tend to be the primary point people for, you know, holding an ROI number.
Right. That would be the project manager who is responsible often for the P&L of the product pr- project aspect. Does that also include the product marketing aspects of it? Or are we only talking about the product development, the build of the product?
Yeah, so the survey actually does include product marketing participants in it. So it does encapsulate their feedback as well. We didn't shave this into parts of the process. Remember, for us, the definition is scope, schedule, and cost execution of a project. So, we don't necessarily cover launch metrics, if you will, and ROI in that. But, at the end of the day, what we're really saying is that product teams, and not all product teams have the benefit of having a product marketing manager or a marketing counterpart. That's something else that we've obviously found in the study is the actual relationship between marketing and product marketing and, the product team is basically rocky. That was one of our key findings that we might get to a little bit later. But we assume that the product team, is basically composed of product managers, engineers. I can give you the list of all the various titles and roles that we believe are actually part, and they basically include business analysts, development managers, engineers, product managers, program managers, project managers, product marketers, product owners, and user experience professionals, and we view them as the key groups that we're interested in following. So, the thought here is that, yes, it would be encapsulated in this, but we have not broken this down. Our basis is scope, schedule, and cost delivery, as opposed to in-market management of the product.
Got it. Quite comprehensive. And also, we might have skipped this at the beginning. Usually when there is an industry-wide study, it is about a specific professional function or discipline. I think this is quite unique, and I don't know of any other studies that looks at the team, not specifically the function or discipline.
That's right. I'm not aware of any other studies as well, in this area, which is part of the reason, obviously, we invest so much time and energy in doing this. Having said that, the other thing that I think is unique about the study is we typically have anywhere between 6 to 15 different organizations that either act as promotional sponsors or partners in, distributing the survey and the white papers as a result, which basically shows that we have a tremendous level of cross-functional association support. So, for example, the IPMA, the International Project Management Association, the Boston Product Management Association, et cetera, there are a variety of different groups that all work with us to ensure that this information, because they view it as being very beneficial, not only to their association members, but because there's not much, facts about these kind of things out there that are accessible to practitioners to be able to help improve executives and practitioners to help them improve, the performance of their organization. So, and the other thing that I would point out is that the study co-authors, so I'm the lead author and I represent the product management side, but Ron Lichty, who is, one of the co-authors, is, a partner, a principal at Ron Lichty Consulting. He's an engineer in practice. Matt Jackson, who's the president of Jackson Consulting, is a project manager. And then, David Height is, a principal at a company called Enterprise Agility, and he represents the BA perspective. So when the study is produced, it's not only produced from, the point of view of myself from the product management viewpoint, but all four of us from our varying viewpoints. And the reason why we do that is because we believe that a product team study should actually include, people who have an understanding of the various aspects of it. And so we work collaboratively together, not only with our partners who span, the various functions, but also, our writing viewpoints and our analysis of the regression analysis is all driven from sort of more of a product team perspective than an individual functional perspective, which is unique.
Excellent. So you had how many co-authors?
There are four authors in total, myself, Ron Lichty, David Height, who's a former past president of the Chicago IIBA a chapter, and then Matt Jackson, who's a president of a consulting company up in Seattle.
Okay.
And I don't want to neglect our statistician, you know, Gary Pickens, who's the chief research officer for Truven Healthcare, because he's obviously central to everything that we do.
By the way, you're listening to the Global Product Management Talk. This is Cindy Faye Solomon, your host. My guest today is Greg Gerasi, who is the lead author on the study of product team performance. The white paper results of that study for the third annual study are available. Go directly to actuationconsulting.com and download the Study of Product Team Performance 2014. You will also be able to access the previous two studies, also available free, or you can go to startupproduct.com and their download is available there from the front page or from every page as well. Let's see, just checking questions. What five additional, so we might have time to answer at least some of this question. What five additional factors were discovered that contribute to the success of high-performing teams? So I think this question comes out of this year specifically. There were five new insights.
That's correct. Yes. Excellent. So there were five factors, as you mentioned, Cindy. The first one had to do with what are the components of, you know, a strong product team culture. So what makes a high-performance product team tick? Second had to do with a critical handoff between, you know, two of the various functions. The third had to do with optimizing the relationship with the sales organization and what are the threads that enable, that relationship to thrive as opposed to, struggle or, have friction. And then the fourth one had to do with awareness of the sales cycle. And we found some pretty staggering information in that area, which I'll share with you in a minute. And then enhancing the marketing relationship was the fifth area that, we actually found some pretty good information in our regression analysis. So would you like me to walk through each one of them and share the findings?
Yeah, we have time.
Okay. So in terms of the components of a strong product team culture, there were five elements that were, consistent with high-performing product teams. The first had to do with a common goal, which united or purpose that unites the team. So high-performing product teams typically have a common goal and purpose, and it's a unifying factor that fuels the success of the team and keeps them united and working in, pulling all their oars in the same direction, working towards a common goal. The second had to do with effective line management. In fact, from the regression analysis, interestingly, effective line management was the most statistically significant of the five, which I find interesting simply because when you think about Agile and the concept of self-organized teams, you wouldn't think that effective line management would be valued as highly as it is. But what respondents told us is that having effective line managers basically enables them to do two things. One is to have someone remove roadblocks to the team's success, and secondarily, to be able to have a sounding board, to be able to run ideas and test concepts with. And those things were very highly valued by product teams. So teams that tend to perform better, at a high-performing level, typically have effective line management in place. The third had to do with the team having strong engineers, but not just having strong engineers. There had to be recognition of the importance of their engineers' contributions and respect for that. That was the third factor. The fourth, which I think we'll see more and more of as we go forward, is the inclusion of talented user experience professionals where warranted, and they have a significant impact on, not only the product team, but also in terms of, the output and, its value. And they're very, it was another factor in the regression analysis. And finally, the unifying factor that teams told us was the infusion of a project manager or scrum master that helps the other members of the team succeed. So that fifth factor really is about, you know, making sure that, you know, a lot of the tasks that, you know, go around organization and coordination of activities are actually not on the shoulders of any of the individual constituents other than the project manager or the scrum master, which enables other team members to focus on their work and be able to make contributions in the areas that they're both most knowledgeable about and passionate about. And it's a strong component to the culture of high-performance product teams. So those were the five sub-factors that came back in the regression analysis this year as it relates to product team culture. Should I go on to the second factor?
Go. That was all
okay.
The first.
Okay.
I'm not tweeting that fast. I'm just telling people to download the white paper. It's all in there.
I just want to try to get through these five if we can in the time that's remaining.
Great.
So stop me if you have a question, okay?
Okay.
The second factor had to do with the critical role of project management. So, you know, once again, or scrum masters. So I need to, you know, make sure that we put the scrum masters in there as well. So a resounding 42% of survey respondents view the role of a project manager or a scrum master as essential, and another 18% viewed it as very important. And in fact, only 3% of product teams thought that they could do without either a scrum master or a project manager. And in fact, what respondents told us was the single greatest transition point that could dictate the success or failure of a product product development effort had to do with the handoff between the product manager and the project manager / scrum master. So that role, that handoff, that transition point is critically important to the success of product development efforts. The third factor had to do with optimizing the sales relationship. And what we found was that only a little over 9% of product teams indicated that they were completely aligned with the sales organization with little or no friction, meaning that 91% of teams either had occasional friction or a complete lack or a constant state of friction, if you will. So an overwhelming number of product teams actually are experiencing some kind of problems. And what they told us is that there's really two things that make the relationship work, high-performing teams. One is that the product team provides sales with timely information and the tools to succeed. Think roadmaps, marketing collateral, things along those lines. But this is a two-way relationship, just like between any functions. And so the sales team, you know, the product team wants the sales team to make reasonable requests. This presumes a couple things, that the sales organization understands where the product team's headed and that there's good communication between those parties. But assuming that that's the case, the product team is looking for the sales team to make requests within the boundaries of what's realistic, which can be challenging, of course. But the high-performing teams have been able to actually strike that balance of not only being able to provide sales with the information that they need to be successful, but also, you know, have strong communication and, you know, are able to at least channel the sales organization into making reasonable requests that don't, you know, disrupt or create friction, you know, between the two parties. The third area had to do with sales cycle knowledge. In fact, what we found was that 67% of product teams appeared to be too internally focused. Only a third of teams basically indicated that they're completely in sync with their product sales cycle. In fact, 43% of teams struggled to stay in sync with it, and 24% didn't even know what the sales cycle was for their product. The key point here is that high-performing product teams understand and integrate sales cycle knowledge into the product team so that they can help their organizations, you know, realize revenue, more efficiently. The fourth factor had to do with enhancing the relationship with marketing, which, as we talked about earlier, survey respondents largely defined as rocky. In fact, only 34% of product teams have a strong working relationship with marketing. And in fact, it comes out that high-performing teams have a higher degree of role clarity between what the product marketing manager or the marketing team does and what's expected of them, you know, throughout all phases of a product's life cycle. So role clarity is essential to, you know, having a strong working relationship with the product marketing or marketing team. And finally, the fifth factor, or I think that was the fifth factor. That was the fifth factor. So I think I covered all five of them. I went as quick as I could.
Awesome. So we covered, there were two sets of five results. Five factors that greatly enhance team success, as well as five interconnected threads that I've been able to tweet out. But the full study that is quite in-depth, and I must say that not only does it provide results, but it does indicate it's quite an education as well, because it enables you to look at and identify, hey, are these factors available within our team environment? And how can we put them in? But it's also the data to enable the product team members to go and point to, hey, if we had this in place, this would certainly raise our effectiveness, as opposed to, not having data and saying we're missing this and we're missing that, as well as, look, product teams are, involved in continuous delivery. It's very challenging. And I know that project managers have to do a debrief, but often I see product managers just going on to the next product, and there isn't enough time put in to actually do a retrospective to determine what worked and what didn't. So this study is very valuable in so many ways.
I agree. I mean, all of the factors from 2012 through 2014 are all statistically significant. So I think, Cindy, as you suggest, taking an inventory of how your team stacks up in each of these dimensions and then chipping away at the factors that, you can either influence or control can help you improve your product team's performance, because each of these factors is statistically significant. So, I can basically, what it says is, if you devote the time and energy to appropriately tackling the various areas that are identified as statistically significant, it will have a true and meaningful impact to your product team's performance.
Excellent. And that brings us to the end of the hour. I've been speaking with Greg Girasi, president of Actuation Consulting. We've been talking about the study of Product Team Performance 2014. It is available for a free download at actuationconsulting.com. There is a lot of information in there. It goes very deep, and you can also access the past 2 years of studies, also available free. And Greg will be speaking. You can meet him in person in Boston. If you go to it's actually posted, it's at the BPMA, and it's posted on the Startup Product Boston site. And he'll be speaking also at the Silicon Valley Code Camp, which is coming up here in October. It's 2 days, 3,000 developers attend. I will also be speaking about lean product marketing. And where else might people meet you in person, Greg, coming up in the next few months?
Yep, I'll be presenting. Well, so we probably have about 20 different events that are pending, but just a couple of note. I'll be at the Chicago Product Management Association in the next month or so. The date's still being worked out, so that's another live event in the short term. We'll be speaking in Plano, Texas at Hewlett Packard at the SIIA, Information Architect Association, Executive Summit. And there's a range of other meetings that we'll be updating on our website. So if you want to check our website in the next probably about 36 hours, the update should have been implemented, and you'll be able to see a range of different locations where you could possibly come and not only meet me, but, ask questions and interact around the study's findings. I'd welcome that very much.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us for this week's Global Product Management Talk. Thanks, Greg, for being on the show and being a great support of our initiatives, both Product Management Talk and as well as the Product Summit coming up. By the way, the early bird tickets have been released for the Product Summit. Go to productsummit.org. It's coming up November 20th through 23rd, 2014, launching the new General Assembly location in San Francisco at 225 Bush. Thanks again, Greg. Thanks to our sponsors, the AIPMM, Webcast Digest. Thanks to Crowd Chat, and join us again next week. You can follow us at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. This is Cindy Faye Solomon, and have a great week.
On a dry winter leaf, I wouldn't know love if you found me.